You know, Dan, I think it's a good point. As Ron said, there's a chat room. And so one of the things, if you've got $5,000 to work with, one of the first things I'd do is I'd get on the internet and I'd take a look and see who's got an active chat room in a small niche, and then bone up like you tell us. Go find out all the
research first.
Yeah. Do the research first, and now go up and go to SRDS and go through and find out where the lists are and how that all works, and maybe even find out who the experts are, and then you can find out, do I joint venture this or do I direct mail?
Would you explain what SRDS is?
That's Standard Rate and Data Service. You can find it at your local library, and it lists most all the lists that are published in the United States.
Aren't you glad I'm here to keep us?
Absolutely. You're doing a great job.
You're doing a phenomenal
Aren't
job.
Aren't you glad I knew the answer?
You're doing You're just doing great. Okay, it's on the list.
Telemarketing.
You go first. And this is the last item in the lightning round.
And Ron, I have a question for you. Is it an intrusion of people's privacy?
Beats the hell out of me. I don't call them. No, seriously, I would not have a company that's selling products without adding a telemarketing arm to the company. I just wouldn't. And the reason is because it produces about 60% of the revenue for our company. And this doesn't make any sense to me. And some people look at it as an intrusion. Some people, because you get intruded upon, you choose not to add telemarketing. It's actually telesales. Telemarketing is a bad word to them. You choose not to think about doing it because you feel like you're intruding on somebody else's privacy. And that's why I guess most people don't do it. But in reality, the people that you're trying to reach that are going to become customers anyway, you're actually doing them a service by pushing them over the fence and taking the job of them responding to you and shortcutting their ordering process and or answering their questions. And if you are selling a good product or services, these are people you may not get. And in fact, that's the way I look at it. I'm doing them a favor if I put my stuff in their hands and I have to push it a little harder than some people would like to get that done. But from an economical point of view, I wouldn't even think about it. If I couldn't implement telemarketing into my program, I'd find another program. It's just that important to us. I mean, it's the for every one that I sell with direct mail, I put 2 to 3 in there with telesales. And any good telemarketing company will tell you the same thing.
Okay. Who else is here?
Hey, Dan.
You got to get it. Yep.
I'll go ahead.
Bill Glazer. Again, what Ron does is he telemarkets to prospects. What we do in the retail end is we telemarket to previous customers or clients, and that's the easiest telemarketing.
We do both.
Yeah. Fine. But I mean that's where you built a relationship with somebody, and they're really looking, and you know, you're really doing them a tremendous service, and they look at it that way. So anybody out there who's listening to this tape, that one person who listens to this tape, if you have a type of business where you have customers. Definitely, you should be telemarketing to those customers. You'll find that that's the best return on your investment in your marketing dollars.
You know, we might want to point out here that there's a legality. It's illegal to call people unsolicited who have not raised their hand and asked for information or, in fact, are a customer. And there are certain hours. There's a federal law, so a lot of
there's also local and state laws.
Yes,
so we're going to pass on.
I just want to bring that up because most
it affects other things, and we haven't talked about the legal issues, you know, of other things either. Anybody else want in?
If you let's say you take in leads and you've got a mail sequence going out, we talked about this in a session that wasn't recorded. What's the best time to have a telemarketing call if you're doing a multiple lead sequence?
6 to 9 p.m.
No. The sequence. After first letter, after second letter, how early, how late is this question?
Well, that depends on the individual camp. I call them right after the first letter.
Yeah, I mean, we would debate that. Differing points of view, for example, he and I would differ totally. He would be early, I would be late. I would tend to put it in as a last resort. He would tend to put it early, and guess what? We're both right.
But also remember that I'm time-oriented because I'm usually selling events. They're taking place not too far off in the future when they get my lead package.
Is that something we should do?
Yeah, sure.
I kind of
a pure economics?
Yeah.
If you do a pure economic argument and you take out issues like lifestyle preferences or personal preferences or some of it, and you do pure economics, you cannot possibly argue with what he said. He's 100% right.
And say that again.
And for most businesses... Well, just note the disclaimer. And for like small businesses, Bill's even 1,000% righter. You know, I mean, if they're not, if they don't have proactive telephone contact in their business with their customers, in connection with special promotions and sales at special times of year, they're idiots.
And most people think that the customers appreciate that.
Of course they do. I was about to say, you're absolutely you're absolutely right.
Okay.
If it's done right, the customer appreciates it. I mean, back to your business. The only time in my entire life I've really had a good clothing salesman, but I had a guy for 3 years, and the guy, you know, probably 6-7 times a year he's on the phone with me. And, you know, the new fall stuff is in, and, you know, well, the best selection's here. I picked out 3 sport coats I think you're going to like, and I picked out a couple of suits, and when can you come in? And I appreciated that. I wanted that happening. I didn't...
You know, it also speaks to what you always preach, which is you lose 10% of your customers for every month that you don't keep in contact with them.
Yep.
So, you know, this is just an additional way to keep those customers in your funnel.
And another thing I'd say, that it always amazes me that business owners don't do it. If they're in trouble... You know, if they got cash flow problems or something's not going right in the business, the fastest way to correct it is get on the phone and start calling the customers.
Absolutely.
You know, and get those customers in there for some reason.
Absolutely.
I mean, I had very good friends that sat there and went broke in a restaurant. And it just baffled me. I mean, it drove me nuts because they had a customer list. I said, you got a customer list. You're sitting here with nobody in the place. You're doing nothing. Get on the phone.
And
Friday's baked chicken day, and we went and found free range chickens in the middle of, you know, tell them a story and get them in.
You know, and the point is, if you're sitting there doing nothing, you got the time to get them on the phone.
Yes,
those
sure.
are people who got the time to bring them in.
If your customers are not coming to some kind of an event, it's the only really way you can get to know them is by the phone. You keep a link going from, and I don't know.
Which, by the way, it also brings, it's kind of linked to telemarketing. We ought to also talk about, which is a tool we haven't even mentioned. We talked about broadcast fax. We talked about email. Let's kind of reveal the secret voice broadcast.
I'm saving that one for my, if I tell you, I got to kill you around.
Okay. We'll go there next. Okay. All right. Okay, anybody else on telemarketing?
How should, obviously you want to compensate telemarketers as a variable cost, but like if you're selling an info product that's got a good margin to it, what kind of numbers are you looking at? I don't want a specific
one. What do you pay them?
Yeah, compensation.
Yeah, that depends on the particular program. High-ticket items,
price.
They generally get somewhere between 8 and 15%.
Okay,
and, but most telemarketing firms will pay them an hourly against a commission or an hourly plus a commission.
Right.
I prefer strict commission. Then I get
right.
the people who are aggressive enough to close the sales.
Is that about
now? That's in house.
Yeah.
That doesn't apply if you hire a telemarketing company.
Right.
Yeah, but your own
numbers
people.
Totally
yeah.
change.
And would you agree in most situations? First of all, the local business is going to do it probably with their own people, or like build a structure, they're going to do it with their own salespeople. If you're hiring a designated telemarketer, or telesales professional would be a better term, to work for you in-house, they pretty much got to be able to make $1,000 a week.
Oh, if they don't make $1,000 a week, they're not going to have it, and they won't be around long.
So you got to figure out a way to structure what it is you have them doing, who you have them doing it to, and what the price and commission points are so that they have a reasonable opportunity to do that.
It's your responsibility to give them enough leads to call.
Right.
That's your job. And
yeah,
it's their job to get a hold of them. Yeah,
now,
as long as you've got plenty of those, you'll keep them.
Also, Ron, I think you'd agree with me that you'll always do better if the person is working for you in-house versus an outside.
Yeah, I would not have anybody outside of, calling outside of the building. They have to be controlled, whether they're commissioned or not. They have to. Somebody has to babysit them and make sure they stay on the phone. Because it's your leads they're wasting if they're not doing that.
Yeah.
And your people are not getting called, therefore your sales are.
Inspect what you expect.
By the way, Bill, if you ever get a supplier that brings you in shirts that expand with your body, I want to be on the top of your list.
Sands about shirt.
We got that little attachment that goes up here at the button that makes it
big. Yeah, well, they've got the pants.
I was using them babies for a few years.
If you want to start putting together a telemarketing department for a company and they don't have one now and they need to supply leads to people, how should they plan that? Is there an average calls a person can... make
yes, I'll give you all the statistics you want. Here's how I started my first telemarketing company. I had one guy come in
and sit down on the telephone and start calling people. And I had no script, didn't know what a script was. He just got on the phone, he started calling people. Pretty soon he started making sales. And I said, shit, this is good. So I had another guy come in. Pretty soon we had a telemarketing department. And then we started learning a lot about telemarketing. The answer to your stats.
And you're a professional speaker too. Yeah.
You can call about 30. This is without any kind of equipment other than the phone. You can call about 30 people an hour. You'll contact about eight people an hour on the average, and you will not reach more than about 60% of any list unless it's a really, really close held in-house list that is cleaned very, very regularly. So if you just know that you can reach about 60% of them, and that's with two or three different tries, call about 30 of them an hour, reach about 8 of them an hour. Those are pretty much standard wide numbers without predictive dialing.
So you need to provide them with at least 30 leads an hour.
You can back that down, and you can figure out how many people it takes to reach how many people leads in X number of time.
Ron, what do you find your conversion rate is to sales?
Conversion all sales, totally, you know, on the product. I mean, I got a $2,500 product. My conversion rate's about 3%. Cheaper product, obviously, it's much, much higher than that.
We go by the inch, for example, with the $99 step-down offer, we closed 20% of the completed calls. Some people did a little better, some people did a little bit worse, but the working average was 20% of the completed calls.
If you infuse that into a business where you get a 20% success rate,
of course,
completed calls, that's a huge number.
Okay, all right, we got to move on. Are you leaving? Sign on.
See
Michael,
you
goodbye.
See.
Everybody say goodbye to Michael. Goodbye, Michael.
We'll see y'all.
Okay.
Care.
We're down to our last 45 minutes or so. I'm going to let you go first so nobody steals it. Okay? So this is the, if I tell you this, I have to kill you round. This is the one thing you're going to reveal that's so good that is your secret. I mean, it's like a secret we'd only talk to ourselves about at Platinum that we wouldn't like teach in our regular seminars. So this has got to be something. So this is so good, if I tell you, I got to kill you. Bill, you go first.
Thank you. It's Bill Glazer. Again, I do the retail marketing. And I guess let me just set up the secret. I use creative theft for this secret. I actually borrowed it from another Platinum member here, Reed Hoisington, who's probably been using it for some time now. He markets to the mortgage business, which is the use of broadcast fax.
You mean broadcast voice?
Voice broadcast. That's what I mean. voice broadcast. And basically, what it's rather simple. It's so simple that even we could do it. You hire an outside company who you send all the phone numbers of your customers to, and we email it. You can send it on disk also to them. And then from your own phone, you record a message into your phone, usually somewhere around 30 to 40 seconds long. And then you tell that company when you want to send that message out, the actual day and time that you want them to receive that message. We find that either 10 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon is the best times, because that's when most people aren't home, because you want to leave the message on the answer machine. You don't want to leave it to a live answer. And we've been doing it now. Sent out over 95,000 of these messages, and have gotten the least response we've gotten is a 35% increase in volume, and we've had as much as a 92% increase in volume for same promotions that we run last year by just adding the voice broadcast component to it. And I guess the last thing I want to say about it is you got to be careful. You're going to get a couple of your customers calling you up that say, you know, this is the biggest intrusion of privacy I've ever had in my life. You know, how could you do this? You're a disreputable human being.
Tell them to get a life.
Right. And you got to be careful that you don't let those couple, because we've had 13 out of 95,000 call us.
That many?
13 people, not 13,000. 13 people call us. And you got to be careful you don't let them influence your good business decisions and say, hey, I'm going to stop doing this because I got all these customers calling me up. It is the one thing that is my biggest secret that we'd have to kill you there.
Quickly demonstrate the message. So, like, for your Thanksgiving sale for promotion, which was the 92% bump, right?
No, that was
35% bump against the same promotion previous year,
right.
Same mailing,
right.
Everything the same. The only thing you added was this.
only thing I had with this, basically I called up and I said, hi, this is Bill Glazer, owner of Gage Menswear. I just want to make sure you receive the Thanksgiving greeting card we sent you. We certainly hope you and your family have a great Thanksgiving. Plus, I just want to remind you, if you come in the store Friday, Saturday, or Sunday after Thanksgiving, you can save up to 18% off all your purchases. And by the way, if you don't have the card we sent you to get the discount, don't worry about it. Just mention code 20 to the cashier, and we'll still give you a duplicate card. And that was it, and it was well received. Now, we typically do it in sequence to a direct mail piece. So it actually becomes part of a magnetic marketing theory. It's just another step. Instead of doing another mail step, it's another step in a sequence.
Just for everybody's clarification, it's called voice broadcast because you're not doing it. While you're recording the message, and then they're broadcasting it literally all at one time to all of those numbers. I mean, zap, it's done. They all got it.
Yeah, one of the things that always sort of amazes people is, according to the provider that we use, he tells me that they can send out 10,000 messages in 8 minutes. So it's a pretty impressive tool that can be done.
Oh, and also, this is neat, they can seed your name. You know, you can be one of the seeds, and it's cool. I mean, recording this
thing, we got microphones here, remember? You can't be standing out in the hall.
It is so neat to record this thing and then know that it's going to come on at 2 o'clock and then pick up the phone when it rings at 2 o'clock and hear your own message.
You know, I'm going to do that just
We knew you'd do that.
Yours, when you would never get a call from a normal human being.
You know, I really care about you.
except like most people, it'll hang up on you.
Okay. I mean, as many of us know, powerful stuff. And that can obviously give somebody a huge advantage. Who else has one so good?
I have a question about that. What's the contact rate approximately? If you send out 1,000 of them, how many are you going to connect?
Yeah,
with?
It's a good question. We find that it's an interesting question because heretofore we've always asked our customers, what's your phone number? And many of them gave us their business number, which a lot of people like to give you their business number instead of their home phone number because they think people are going to call them at home while they're trying to have dinner.
Or some of these annoying messages.
Right. Right. But so now what we do is we ask them, what's your home phone number? So the point I'm trying to make to you, Craig, is that we get, on the first shot, we get about 35% connect rate. And then that's at 10 o'clock in the morning. Then I always do a second shot at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to everyone who we didn't connect with. And we usually pick up about 75% of that. So we get close to about 50, 55% total connect rate. But we think we can even do better than that going forward if we had just home numbers in our database, which we're now, you know, at the time when we started collecting numbers, we didn't know about this technology, so we didn't think to do that. You know,
what do you find, Reed, with the connect rate on the voice broadcast?
28% round one and round two, maybe up to 35. But that's just a plain list.
Homeowners in your case, right? You're doing homeowners.
Yeah.
We found when we did a list purchase of homeowners, we were over 60%.
I mean, this applies to, I mean, this could be the local pizza joint doing this. I mean, this applies to all sorts of businesses.
One thing for him is to take those, run them through Marty's response, doubler, and I think you would be like sector 1, 2, 3, you know, call 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That'll save you a ton.
Okay. Who else has got a... Anybody, give us one that's so good you got to kill them.
I've got one.
Okay.
Well, and I don't know how to explain it. I'd like to get some clarification from the panel here so that to help the listener understand this. But, you know, people are always asking, Eileen and I are our customers, they're always saying, because we teach our customers marketing techniques, and they're saying, well, what do I sell to my customers? What do I sell to my customers? We just hear that over and over again. And we always tell them that, you know, one of our biggest secrets is that we've learned, and we're still learning, I mean, how to develop related but different kinds of products. You know, it's just it's the same old stuff that people love, but with new packaging. And there's an art to this, and it's one of our... Eileen and I, it's one of our biggest secrets because we just keep coming out with new stuff that's really, it's made to look new. The customer perceives it as new, but it's really just our old stuff repackaged with a new, in a new way. So it's like an endless variation on a theme. You know, everyone here, they know what, you know what your customers like or what your customers want. But there's a real art and a science, and we're still learning it. I'm not trying to claim that we've got it all figured out. But, you know, how you keep coming up with new stuff that's really not new.
Well, I can give you an example. There's a retail jewelry chain, and the name now escapes me. I think it's Weisfields. I'm not sure. And maybe this is a bicycle promotion to different chains across the country. I'm not sure. But 2 years ago, it was the first time that they did it. They discovered that, and I don't remember which holiday was first, but they discovered that what worked great for them was the jewelry gift combined with some other gift in a package. So it was, like for Valentine's Day, it's the heart pendant that is inside the velvet heart-shaped box surrounded by heart-shaped chocolates. Okay? And they found that in response to that in their advertising was infinitely better than when they used to just advertise the heart-shaped pendant. Customer liked getting the whole thing as a little bundled package. So now, every holiday, they do that type of a promotion. Obviously, not the heart pendant, not the heart candies, not the heart-shaped box, but at Christmas, it's some kind of a jewelry item in some kind of a Christmassy package with something else around it.
Teddy bear with the
little... Yeah, et cetera. And so they've taken the exact same... They found out what the customers were responsive to, and as you say, it was good terminology, an endless variation on the theme. And they'll repeat that now over and over and over and over again. Right?
Well, we do it with our info products, and I know that everybody can do it more. I mean, we're always finding new ways to do it. We know other people that they haven't quite figured it out yet. They just it's too complicated of a concept for them to think it. You know, how do I come up with new stuff that's just my old stuff?
Well, I think a good point is, you know, since all the money, well, most of the money is in the marketing, you don't want to get stuck in product development. So it's important to come up with shortcuts for product development. I know TJ, every Wednesday morning, we have like a product development team, and we just constantly record every Wednesday audio cassette programs. And there are people that have audio cassette programs, where they say, well, I want to book, I'll transcribe it. But you have to come up with shortcuts because you don't want to be stuck in constant product development. And there's tons of ways to take one product and make
it. Well, the ultimate product development shortcut of recent history is chicken soup for the blank.
Yeah.
I mean, there has been no greater shortcut in product development lately that I know of.
The dummy book?
There are now, dummy books is a sure. Yeah. There's another 33 chicken soup titles coming out in the next 6 months. I mean.
Well, I've got a shorter way to product development than that. License it from someone else. Let them do all the work.
Yeah, but that's not an example of what he's talking about, which is endless variation on a theme.
Well, but he's still looking for more products to add to it.
Yeah, but I mean, the question is...
the same consumers that we have.
The issue here, see, this is a real important little trick. It's like, what exactly do they want, and how do you give it to them again and again and again?
They want a magic pill.
New packaging, okay.
Just give them a different way to get it.
So... apply that, like to your customers, okay?
I mean, my customers are the cream of the crop.
No, I mean the real estate entrepreneur, right? So if you sell him a website, in order for those investors to buy a website from you, what's the single most important thing about it that has to be true?
It has to make their job easier, make them more money while doing less work.
It has to require no work on their part, right? And I mean, once you figure that out, everything you're going to sell to them, whether it's the website or whether it's a radio advertising kit or a TV advertising kit or whatever, you would make it so it required no work. So in other words, find the one driving
right
thing.
And then the art is to make it always sound new, and your customers, because that they always perceive it as being new, but it's really not new.
Okay. Who's next? It's so good, I got to tell you.
I'm John Rubio here. The killer idea I have here, which I borrowed from Joe,
from Piranha Marketing.
Don't give him credit.
Well, you know, I don't want to be a man at me after we leave here. You're like, dude, you got it from me.
He stole it from someone.
I borrowed it. You know.
There's nothing original.
His statue is actually a statue of somebody else.
The client, eavesdrop line where potential clients can listen to happy, satisfied customers or clients that are already currently using your services. For instance, in my niche, lawyers want to know how well my system's working, so they want to speak to other busy lawyers that are currently using my system, and we just don't allow that because my clients are busy and they're doing their thing. So what I provide them with is a 24-hour eavesdrop line that they can call. It's an 800 number, and they can listen to multiple clients, tell them how the system's working for them, how they're implementing my systems and strategies. And I have that also posted on my website. Now my website is an interactive site where they can actually listen to people talking about my system rather than just reading a whole bunch of text. And now my next step is to take that to my clients and teach them how to make their yellow pages actually come to life by having their cases or clients say how great this law firm was.
Not to mention a bunch of topics, too. Because, I mean, the largest lawyer for bankruptcy in Chicago was built on having info tapes in his yellow page and driving to those.
Any tips for getting the best testimonials for eavesdrop lines?
Call and ask for them.
Well, in your case, you could send out a letter to everybody letting them know that you will send them a free gift if they will call up a recorded message that you set up and just leave a testimonial on the recorded message, and then you drive everyone to a voicemail box to listen to a brief recording from you saying thank you. I want to let you know anything you leave here I will be able to use for my promotional materials, and I want to thank you, and I'm going to send you out a free whatever for doing so. If it's a service business, you send them a gift certificate towards your services or something else. If it's an information business, you send them a free cassette tape, a money off something, any type of free gift, a free report whatsoever, and you just have people call a recorded message line to leave testimonials.
The other option would be to get them online and interview them.
If
you get all your customers together in one place, like you have some kind of customer appreciation event, either you or somebody is walking around with a tape recorder taping.
I do it at every boot camp. I have over 9.5 hours of testimonials on video and cassette tape for my clients that we've gathered through boot camps and seminars and stuff. And also at the end of a conference call, if you do a conference call, you can take the last 15 minutes of it just to collect client testimonials. Real easy to do. I got an idea.
Yes.
This
is your biggie now.
Yeah. I mean, this. People always ask me all the time, how is it that you've done what you've done and sold so much stuff in the carpet and upholstery cleaning industry? People that are in industries that are 10 times larger and supposedly have people that have more money and supposedly are more business savvy, but we all know that irregardless of what business someone's in marketing-wise, almost everybody equally sucks. In their knowledge of marketing, so
it's very flattering to everybody listening.
Someone in carpet cleaning. I don't see any more carpet cleaners that are any less marketing savvy than doctors.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree.
I mean, people think that white collar people are so much smarter. Actually, they're not. They're not much smarter at all. What I would say that I do that most people do not do, and I don't, let me try to describe it. I'm even working on creating this, calling it direct response networking. If there's anything that's allowed me to be successful in my niche and leapfrog above everybody else is my ability to develop relationships with bigwigs within the industry and outside of the industry and leverage who they are. You hear people say things like, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Well, to a certain degree, it's not just what you know. That's very important. It's not just who you know. It's what you do with who you know and what you know to leverage that in the most maximum ways. And I am
a diagram. We need a page now, don't we?
I am a professional name dropper, and I do it very well. And I've made a tremendous amount of money by leveraging the relationships that I've developed with business people, you take all my Tape of the Month interviews, which are, by the way, available at tapeofthemonth.com.
Credit card in hand.
Yeah. You must have a credit card when you go to that website. It's not even set up yet, but it will be. Anyway, I'll try to like piece in
this
the
is not, we're not just
I'll
selling a product that doesn't exist
here.
Yet. We're because selling the site that doesn't exist yet that sells the product.
Oh, by the time anyone gets this tape, that site will be up.
Already firing.
Now I have a reason to set it up.
I got you. Okay.
But anyway, you take all the people that I've interviewed for my Tape of the Month, well-known people. You know, I just interviewed Mark Victor Hansen not too long ago, Chicken Soup for the Soul guy. Now, people see that I interview Mark Victor Hansen. All of a sudden, everyone that's in that professional author, speaker category wants to be interviewed. I become friends with all these people. Almost everybody that I've ever interviewed for my Tape of the Month, I become friends with. I talk to them on the phone all the time. A lot of them hire me.
Well, along those lines, let's give your trade magazine editor secret.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's perfect application of what you're talking about, and it's very specific.
Okay, if you're in a particular niche or anything, this applies to even my carpet cleaners that are listening to this tape. If you want to get in with, in like a niche industry, for instance, to get articles placed in a magazine, then invite the editor or ask the editor if they would do an interview on future trends of the industry. Because any editor of any magazine, first off, never works his butt off, never gets the recognition that they would like, and in many cases deserve, and they know a tremendous amount about the industry or the subject that they're the editor of the magazine for. And they love to talk about it. Why do they love to talk about it? Because that's what they do. It's their whole gig.
For the listeners, this requires you to have some media. Okay, so Joe has his Tape of the Month, which gives him something to interview anybody and everybody for. So now to ingratiate yourself with the editor of the trade magazine in the carpet cleaning industry, you go interview that editor on trends in the industry for your Tape of the Month. So now let's take it down to your carpet cleaner who lives in Columbus, Ohio, who doesn't put out a Tape of the Month. He does put out a newsletter.
Correct.
Or he should. So yeah. He does own a media. And that does give him something to interview people for.
Yes.
And so he could use the same time. He could interview the editor of the local newspaper. He could interview the news anchor of the local TV station. He could interview the president of the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
As long as you find a reason to do the interview and it's of interest to the readers of your newsletter, he's accomplishing exactly the same thing that you are.
Yeah, I mean, he can go to Kathy's Bakery that has a wonderful recipe for cookies at Easter and interview Kathy and give Kathy's Bakery a plug. And now what is Kathy going to think about this carpet cleaner because he put a little recipe of hers in the plug in his newsletter? He's a great guy. So Kathy, all of a sudden, the bakery's doing an endorsement for the cleaner. I mean, there's a million different ways that you can leverage relationships, more so than just have somebody doing it endorse mainly. And a lot of what I do is I just go out and I meet people. And all the gurus that I used to study and learn marketing from, most of them are friends of mine now. And I can call them up all the time. You know, Gary Halbert is the first guy I ever started, learning marketing from. And I talk to Gary on the phone 3 or 4 nights a week. He stays in my house every once in a while. I mean, we become buddies. And it all stems because asking him at some point to allow me to interview him and, you know, things like that. So there's a lot of leverage available to everyone if you just go out and seek it out. And I'll tell you one thing about gurus. If you position it correctly, everybody that knows something loves talking about it. I mean, all of us.
Because
although
they aren't threatened, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Who cares?
I mean, but again, the positioning has to be there. You know, I only want to help people out for free, people that really, truly appreciate something and exchange value. So I never go in and just try to freeload things from people. I mean, if I'm going to ask somebody to be interviewed for my Tape of the Month, I truly am reciprocal. I do everything I can to help them because they're helping me. And I think you've always got to, if you're going to take value from somebody, you want to create value for them and show them that you really appreciate it. And if you do that, most people are happy to help you out. And they like talking about it. You know, even if they're $1,000 an hour consultants, they love talking about what they do. That's why they do it. And so, networking, leveraging your relationships. Take photographs of every opportunity you have with your clients. Whenever you do a seminar, take group photos. Any type of endorsement you can get from people that are well-known and celebrities, take it. I mean, it's all out there. And I carry a camera with me all over the place. I've got pictures of myself with all kinds of people. I mean, I still don't even leverage it.
Most of them are covered by it. it is a great strategy. It is a fantastic strategy.
And if you want the website to see Joe's picture, it's www. Oh, that one. The clean one.
Okay, this is so good now.
Oh.
You tell us, you got to kill us.
Well, let's see. This goes along with what Joe said.
Then you have to kill him.
Well, let's say I've worried about saying my name three, but I'd say the last name, but it takes too long. you go with what you got.
I always said when I started speaking, I started too. I always said the good news is I don't need as much material as anybody else to do a full day seminar.
Well, my twist on that is you need to hear it twice so you're in luck.
You got spaced repetition built in.
Yeah. I can tell my name by now, by the way.
Yeah.
Joe's thing is, let's suppose. Oh, damn, I forgot what I was let's say you call the CEO of some large firm who they also might pay to create many, many, many more tapes to also send to your whole list. Like, let's suppose there are 30,000 possible clients, and you have 1,000 who get this tape. Well, they could sell products to the whole 30,000. So, say, why not pay, and we'll mail these to the whole group, and that can plug him, plus plug you.
Correct. Or they might reproduce it and send it out. It doesn't make any difference as long as it gets out. You're right. Absolutely right.
Of course, you just had that happen. Ego driven too.
Yeah, see,
tape of the month I just did with Dan Sullivan. A lot of my people that I interview, he's a strategic coach. A lot of the people that I interview, you know, they end up taking my tapes and they turn them into products for their own companies. So Dan Sullivan, in turn, is taking the interview with them and turn it into a strategic coach product. And that, of course, he'll use that to promote strategic coach, which I highly recommend. But it gets me a ton of...
Can you name dropping again?
Of course. It's getting me a ton of exposure to people that potentially could do business with me.
Okay. Who else has got one?
I got one. This was just done recently, produced $15,000 in 12 days, and it's running auctions. That was just one auction. I ran two of them, one actually on an auction site, produced $15,000 in 12 days, and then I did one through the mail, which was 20-to-1 return on marketing dollars. So, you know.
When you did one, talk about the one through the mail.
The one through the mail, actually these were two just leads that I had tried every possible way to sell to, and I used fax, so I didn't bring it up earlier because it was already mentioned, but I used faxing, and I faxed them the auction, and I you know, and for some people this might be a stretch, but I sent them a fax saying they could pay anything they wanted, and we were going to take the top 10 or 15, you know, and most people won't do that because they're going to say, you know, people just aren't going to pay me enough. And we only had one person for a $900 product offered $50. The next lowest bid was $300. Well, our cost is $50. So if the $49 guy would have offered $2 more, you know, he might have got it. So I take that back. It wasn't by the mail. It was by fax. It was by fax. So that returned a 20-to-1. The other was. Went out and offered basically a license on an auction site and sold a bunch of them.
Okay.
So, and out there on those sites, you know, there's one woman collecting rocks in, you know, New Zealand or somewhere and making necklaces out of them and selling them a ton to people in the U.S. because it's exotic jewelry. And, you know, your product cost is the rocks off the beach. So.
Yes.
Well, my secret, this is Ron Einbeck, is something that I don't know where I got it from, but
once probably
I
came, no.
was since I've done, you know, so many broadcast fax, probably, you know, 500,000, 750,000 broadcast fax that I've done, was to just take the exact same ad that I had faxed out before and measure the results, then scrawl the handwritten note on top of it, like it came from a friend, signed it, and doubled the results immediately off the exact same fax.
Plus put post and distribute too.
Yeah, I haven't tried. I haven't tried. Well, most of the shops that
Boston
I
is or ones.
Yeah,
absolutely right. Well, you're faxing into a real estate office or a sales office.
That
sure.
Post and pass on at 5 to 1.
My lead cost was really low with that. My conversion rates were just horrible.
Yeah, the conversion rates are going to be down a little bit on broadcast fax, but the lead cost is so much less. So essentially, it works out the same. But by putting the personalized look to it. Very similar to the handwritten envelope if you're doing direct mail. That's the way to accomplish the exact same thing. Get underneath the radar, get it noticed, get it, you know, somebody's going to read it because there's a handwritten note on top of that, and has given me dramatic results.
Great. Anybody else?
I'd like to talk about Chauncey Hutter. I'd like to talk about Chauncey Hutter. No.
We talk about it all the time anyway.
Yeah. So. A mindset, just the mentality of making a sale through marketing. And one thing I first realized this, or actually, the only thing I learned from college, going to school, I didn't learn anything except for this one class where the professor graded all the tests based on class. The guy who ever did the whole class could do crappy, but the guy that did the worst crappy job got the A, and the guy did the, you know what I'm saying, there's
a
A
curve.
Right.
But that's, well, he's demonstrated the accuracy of the fact that he learned nothing.
That's it?
The point is that that's real life. That, you know, your ad only has to be as good as to be better than the guy down the street. If your competition, in my case, I got H&R Block right across the street, and I've got one time, I got to make one sale a year to somebody, and I visualize the guy walking down the sidewalk, and he's either going to go left to the Block office or go come right to my office. And what do I got to do in my ad that causes him to come my way instead of the other way? Because second place in this business means $0. It means you lose. First place, you win. You take, it's winner take all. And so that, with that kind of mentality in my thinking about it, that has helped me to try to tweak my ads better and better year after year, find one little thing I can do to the ad tax season after tax season to bump up the response. Because if I can get a couple more guys walking down the sidewalk coming this way to me instead of the other way, it makes a big, it's just pure profit. And
right, so it's your willingness to your desire to be the number one in your market. I like that. That's one of the things I wrote down too. I mean, and Joe Polish has his Eat Your Competition Alive. Ron LeGrand, first time I ever met Ron, he said I'm the best in the world at what I do. You know, it seems like there's this desire with super successful, super rich people that to be the best in their.
But it's also an excellent point because it reduces people's feeling they can't do it if they understand that they only got to beat their competition. They don't have to be the best at this. And like I always tell people, if you're going to start a health newsletter and you're going to go up against Rodale and you're going to go up against Agora and you're going to go up against Phillips, you better be a master of direct mail. But if you're going to be Bill Glazer, no offense intended, if you're going to be Bill, and you're going to be Gage Benmentor in Baltimore, you don't have to be anywhere near that good to get super results with your direct mail. You just got to be better than the rest of the menswear stores. Tom Landry backstage told me once, we were talking football, and I said, what do you guys work on conditioning? What's the goal? He said, it's very simple. I want each of my guys to get tired 1 minute later than the guy across the line. He said, that's all I want. One more minute.
You know, Dan, I think, remember the old story about the two guys camping and the bear comes up?
Yes.
Which is
all I got to do is outrun you.
Yeah. What do you put? You can't outrun the bear.
I don't got to run faster than the bear. All I got to do is outrun you.
That's it.
Now, I have a question. Now, all of us in this room is really, we've studied just about everything.
Is going to be it.
This is the wrap-up question. Everybody in this room has studied everything that you've done, Dan Kennedy. And we'd like to know what the one thing you haven't told us
Yeah, the secret that you die.
Right,
yeah,
right. So you're it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I will tell you this, that you guys remember to do stuff that I told you that I forget or don't do, you know, and so it's like anything else. Not only do you learn from others, but you ought to review your own stuff, what you did last year and what you did the year before, because we all are constantly guilty. You know, the guy who says, I forgot more about that than you'll ever know, is often telling the truth. But he's not further ahead than you because he forgot it. And so you got to constantly go back through. I mean, I find, like, if I have to do a new sales letter for one of my old products, and I got to go through there to check bullet points and try and find something new to say about it, I'm reminded of all kinds of stuff I'm not doing. So I don't know that there's anything I haven't told you.
Well, you know, just as a pickup for that, I sent out a tape on my kit as a follow-up after people bought my kit. And it really significantly reduced my refund rate by just saying on the tape that, you know, I'm not so sure there's anything in here that you have never learned before, but just by being reminded of it, it will oftentimes be enough to get you to start doing things again and then, you know, jumpstart your business. And now when I run into retailers at different trade shows, they tell me that line, like, you know, yeah, I sort of heard all this stuff before, Bill, but by just reminding me of it, it really has made a big impact in my business.
Yeah.
The question is, what would you do if you had to start from scratch broke?
Well, there's an ugly thought to end a happy day on. Who invited you to this meeting?
Let's say you, with all the years of all this stuff you have learned, you...
Well, I mean, dead broke, you'd have to start over with manual labor marketing, and so you'd have to... But you'd do it infinitely smarter than I used to do manual labor marketing, because even if you have to do it with manual labor, you can be more selective, so targeting comes into issue. Message to market match, making sure you've matched an offer and a product and a service perfectly with a segment of the market.
Picking a niche.
Yeah,
picking a niche. Jeff Gardner stuff and get free advertising.
Get free advertising. I mean, but even if you're going to be a door-to-door sales guy, if you had to do that because you had no resources and so you're going to go out on the street, you know, with a mop and a bucket and go clean windows, I would be smarter at picking the street and picking the guys I walked into and what I said, the headline I crafted when I walked in the door for the first thing to come out of my mouth. You know, I mean, the stuff that we know how to do, if you know it and you do have to start over dead broke, you're sure better off than being dead broke and not knowing it.
Can I add something to that? Because I get asked that question all the time, you know, about real estate. And I tell them, I said, listen, if you can't pay your bills on Friday and you don't have groceries on the table, the first thing you need to do is go get a job to get some income coming in so you can free your mind up long enough to focus on building a business. Because information marketing, direct mail, it's just not instant revenue. And there's no reason to lead people to believe that it is. You're not going to start today and have money on Friday. And so you've got to get that pressure off of you or you're never going to get there.
No, but you can sell. I mean, you know, really what you ought to do is go sell. And in fact, just as a side piece of advice, anybody in starting any business would be well advised. If somebody decided that they're going to start a new business this month, the best thing they could do before they did that is go get a job selling in that industry and or get a face-to-face, nose-to-nose, toes-to-toes sales job like water conditioners, vacuum cleaners, fire alarms, encyclopedias. Go do that for a few weeks. Get your brains beat in and force yourself to get good enough at that you can survive. And as a result of that, all of this other stuff becomes easier to do because really that's what we're doing in print. You know, I said that some years back when we did that survey of chiropractors, all of the guys doing huge numbers, every single one of them, had worked somewhere, going to school, putting themselves through school. They'd been in a nose-to-nose, door-to-door, face-to-face sales kind of an environment. I had this conversation with a guy who just wanted to get his kids doing something. You know, what business should I put my kids in? I said, if you can get them to do it, go get them selling face-to-face to mom and pop, you know, and let them get that experience because it's the best learning curve. And I'll bet you in this room, I'll bet you three-fourths of this room, right?
I sold water conditioning equipment right out of college for
Waterfellers.
Yeah.
Reed.
Carpet cleaning door to door.
Carpet cleaning door to door.
Electrolux gear borrowed.
Okay.
I sold encyclopedias when I was in college.
Okay.
Unfortunately, telemarketing.
Okay. Fuller Brush and then real estate. Fuller Brush and real estate.
Dating services.
Dating services. You are closer for like the Great Expectations?
Wow.
Oh, numerous. Vacuum cleaners, cookies, garbage bags, you name it.
Yeah.
Girl Scout, Boy Scout cookies.
Not
Girl
Scout. Everything.
Got, my first company at 17 was I sold Little John water savers to go in the tank of your toilet. Then I sold advertising while in college for the Arizona Daily Wildcat. And then out of college, I worked in marketing and sold beer jets.
Mm-hmm. I sold newspaper subscriptions door to door. And when I was like 14 years old, I was the number one guy in Phoenix. I won a trip to Disneyland out of like 2,500 newspaper carriers. That was pretty damn funny because they used to make people feel sorry for me. And I've sold vacuum cleaners door to door. I've numerous jobs, tons of different jobs, and it definitely helps.
I sold replacement windows door to door.
That's something.
Heavy, hard
clothes.
And, you know, it's just
Michael sold insurance and work in the
shop. Yeah, it's important for everybody to understand. That really, I mean, whoever's line it wasn't Halberts. He got it from somebody else that's long since dead. But salesmanship and print, I mean, that's what great marketing is. It's not advertising. It's salesmanship.
You know what else it does? It creates a willingness to fail.
Character.
Because anybody who believes we're not going to fail hasn't been there. They're living in la-la land.
Yeah,
can I say something about that since this is like towards the end of the tape?
It's virtually the end of the tape.
The, you know, all successful business people that I know, and I know a lot of them, and if you want to say successful, people have lots of money, are not the result of people that were born with money or not the result of people that have money given to them along the way or won it in the lottery. It's the result of people that had enough perseverance to make a lot of mistakes and not give up and be opportunity focused and just go out and learn from their mistakes and do things, you know, more successfully because they learn from the mistakes.
You are going to make decisions and take action.
Exactly. Yeah. You're going to fail. You're going to make mistakes. The majority of growth will come out of exertion and effort. And if you're not willing to do that, then you're not cut out to be an entrepreneur. And that's all there is to it. And you aren't going to have great days. You know, all of us have had real crappy days and crappy times, and we will in the future. But the fact is, you stick with it. You educate yourself. You associate with success-minded people. You don't pay attention to conventional nonsense. You just go out there and you achieve what you want to achieve.
You don't listen to the morons along the way.
Well, we all have the same 24-hour day that everybody else does. It's how we use that time and how we focus in on what we want to achieve that I think makes it happen.
We all have flawed character and bad judgment.
Clearly.
So on that note, that's it. Thank you, everybody.
You've been listening to a roundtable discussion on marketing with the Year 2000 Kennedy Platinum Inner Circle. These audio recordings are copyright protected by Kennedy Inner Circle Incorporated, and reproduction in any form is strictly prohibited except by these Platinum members. The opinions of each individual are their own and are not necessarily shared by all the participants or by the publisher. As with all business information, it's presented in generic form. It is the listener's sole responsibility to use this information in an appropriate manner, complying with all relevant laws, and neither the publisher nor any of the participants accept any liability for any individual's use of or actions taken as a result of this information.